As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Just to mix it up, this is Bill Huber with Matt Schneidman, head of the pack. Matt is afraid to say head of the pack in the airport at O'Hare in Chicago. That's why I'm batting leadoff. Matt, how you doing?
I'm all right. I'm tired. I did not sleep last night. You know, I left the press box at about 3:30 in the morning. I had a flight at 6:45 from Buffalo to O'Hare. I'm at O'Hare right now. My flight to Appleton leaves in about an hour and 15 minutes. So we're trying to get a podcast in. No one wants to hear me complain. You want to hear us complain and fuel your misery about the Green Bay Packers. So that's why we're here. You know what, Bill? Let's start with a positive. They're 3-5, but the offense showed us some stuff last night. We'll get into all the bad. The offense showed us some stuff last night. I'm sorry I'm stuttering over my words. I'm working on about 30 minutes of sleep. The Bills came into the game as the number one rush defense in the NFL, 76.2 rushing yards allowed per game. And the Packers ran for 208 and 6.7 yards per carry. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon really ran the rock well. It's ironic. I wonder if you thought the same thing watching the game, that after all these years of Matt LaFleur saying, oh, we got down early, we abandoned the run, they stuck to the run, down multiple scores, and it actually worked.
You know, here's what I was thinking watching the game, Matt. I was thinking, LaFleur knows they're going to lose this game. They're getting their tails kicked. Maybe he's using this game because the game is over. It's 24-7, right? The game is over.
Yeah.
Maybe he's using this game to build for the second half of the season. He's going to run the football, because it's finally dawned on him that that's how they're going to win football games. So the second half of that football game was to get ready for the rest of the season. That's what I think. We'll see. I'm sure he would never say it. I'm sure he's never going to go up there later today, Matt, and say, yeah, I knew we were screwed, Bill, so we're going to run the ball. But I'm wondering if that was the plan. What we do best is run the football. That's what we're going to do for the second half of the season. We're going to use this as our preseason and get ready for it. Because it did work. Buffalo is number one in the league in yards per carry allowed. And they ran it right down their throat. Aaron Jones, I had 14 missed tackles last night, Matt. Ooh. Guy was incredible.
He was awesome. He was really good. I made the joke that, you know, Buffalo is going to offer a couple first-round picks for him before he gets back on the bus. Listen, he was the best player on the field for the Packers last night. On the offensive side of the ball, at least. I thought Jaire Alexander was really good on defense.
Yep.
Listen, this is going to have to be their identity second half of the season, and they're really going to have to lean into it. Rodgers said after the game, you know, for us to be successful, I'm paraphrasing here, we're going to have to throw the ball downfield. No, you don't. What do you mean? No. You know, the Packers don't have any wide receivers who can separate downfield. Romeo Doubs made a hell of a touchdown catch, and Smory Touré kind of broke loose in garbage time.
Don't say garbage time, Matt. The quarterback could take exception to that.
Right. Don't say garbage time. Guess what, Bill? I'm going to say garbage time.
Yeah, you're right. So is Ryan Wood when he said that.
So listen, there were some nice moments. on offense, specifically in the run game. But like you said, it reminds me of Aaron Boone watching the Yankees so much. Like, there are just these punt games that he does, and in the middle of those games where he knows he's going to lose or he doesn't expect to win, he tests things out. And, you know, I won't go as far to say LaFleur was like, oh, we're not going to win, but maybe it was a little bit of an experiment. It was a little questionable that they just let the clock keep running, but how else were they going to get yards? They weren't going to move the ball any other way, so they had no choice, and that's the problem with this offense, is they can't do a lot of things well. And that's just the state of the Green Bay Packers offense. But I asked Aaron Jones after the game if he thought this was a step forward for the offense, and he said unequivocally yes. Maybe it is a building block. There are games. Listen, I know it's doom and gloom, and I'm not going to write my stories as if there's, you know, a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But the fact of the matter is, and I'll acknowledge this in my stories too, they are one game out of a playoff spot. The 49ers currently hold the 7th seed. They're 4-4. Packers are 3-5. They play the worst team in football on Sunday in Detroit. They should be able to win that one. Knock on wood. I can't find any wood around me, but knock on wood.
There. There you go.
There you go.
Well, they are going to have to throw the ball downfield. I mean, they have to. You can't win this way. Just run the ball. And they learned that on 4th-and-1 in the second half. They ran the ball right down the field. On 4th-and-1, they got stopped and the drive is over. So you do have to get some chunk plays to make it easier, but this is like football 101, right, Matt? You run the ball a bunch, you dial up play action, you chuck it down the field. So that's their form. Alan Lazard has always been a pretty decent deep threat because people know that he's going to block him. So maybe he can get behind some guys. I wonder if Toure showed Rodgers something last night that he hadn't showed him previously. And maybe, just maybe, Matt, by the time people are listening to this on Tuesday afternoon, maybe they'll have acquired a receiver to help with that. But they are going to have to throw it because all those one-yard passes they throw for the first 7 weeks got them nowhere.
Right, because for those to work, you have to block it absolutely perfectly. Yeah. And you're not going to do that every time, so the percentage of those -1 air yard passes or 0 air yard passes, percentage of time those turn into the gains that you want, is not that often. You know, the Packers have some good guys blocking on the perimeter, and they got a couple of those last night up the sideline, but that's just not a way an offense can be sustainable. But I wanted to transition into the trade deadline. It's tomorrow afternoon. The Packers are 3-5. Like we said, they're a game out of the playoffs. We've discussed this before on here. I almost think there's more urgency to make a move this year for a wide receiver than there has been the past 2 years or 3 years, because, as I've said, those years they could get away with not making a move and say, oh, well, we were so close, we felt like we had the right guys in-house to get over the hump, even though maybe one wide out would have helped them do that. This year, they can't sit back and say, we have the guys in-house who can help us get over the hump. And it's not just performance, it's injuries. Who knows how long Christian Watson's going to be out? That looked like a nasty concussion. Randall Cobb's on IR for a couple more games. You know, Sammy Watkins has the potential to get injured. It's not a great situation. There was one point I was looking at through my binoculars on the Packers sideline. It was Sammy Watkins, Samori Toure, Amari Rodgers, and Romeo Doubs on the bench. It's like, Jesus, they got to get someone. Even if it's a Brandon Cooks, I don't expect them to sell the farm for a DJ Moore or a Jerry Jeudy. Chase Claypool is probably out of their price range, but I expect them to make a move because they can't just sit back and say, oh, we're good with what we got, because they're not. And if they sit back, it sends the message that they're waving the white flag. Sure, they could come out and say, oh, we were in the mix, we tried, leaked some reports, wherever. But we've talked about it, Bill. They went as all in as you can go, minus the wide receiver position. Now is their chance to add someone there, while the season is not entirely lost yet. I think they have to, or else it sends the message that they're somewhat waving the white flag. There's more urgency now to get someone than in years past. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. And I know in the fan questions, there are people asking if they should trade Aaron Jones and rebuild. And look, I get the sentiment there. This might be the last year with Aaron Rodgers. And look, I realize he's not had a great year, maybe not even had a good year. But he's still better than Jordan Love. And to me, Matt, you could be 3-5. I mean, they are 3-5. You could be 3-5 coming off getting your butts kicked. But they actually played pretty well yesterday. But you just got to get in the playoffs. You just can't say, you know what? The Rodgers era is over. He's going to win one Super Bowl. We're going to move on. And that's what, to me, signals if you're not going to make a trade, you've admitted defeat and the Aaron Rodgers is going to be over with the one Super Bowl. I think you just got to go. You got to go for it. Even if the odds are stacked against you actually emerging from the NFC, I just think you got to go for, you've come this far on quote unquote all in. You might as well take another shot at it. Otherwise, all these other moves you've made are for naught. So, yeah, you got to go for it. Brandon Cooks is a 6,000-yard season the last 7 years. He's a proven deep threat guy. Houston selling, obviously. That, to me, makes a lot of sense. Or even if it's like, you mentioned Nelson Agholor, didn't you, in your story? Is a name you threw out there?
I did not mention him.
Or Kendrick Bourne?
Yeah, I mentioned Kendrick Bourne.
Okay, so, I mean, those aren't great receivers, but they can stretch the field, right? I mean, Nelson Agholor is a heck of a good deep threat. I realize he's got some flaws and he's not a number one receiver. But if you can stretch the field with guys that defenses actually care about, I think that helps.
Bill, the last two seasons, Brandon Cooks, 2021, 90 catches, 1,037 yards, 6 touchdowns. 2020, 81 catches, 1,150 and 6 touchdowns. Sounds like a guy that could help.
He's only 29. I shouldn't say only, but he is 29. And he's under contract, I want to say, through 24. So, look, I don't think Green Bay is going to be in one-year rental mode here. I would think they'd want to get a player who's going to help this year, but also can help next year or the year. So it's a rookie contract guy who's got, say, he's under contract through 23 or whatever, or a veteran like Cooks who's through 24. I don't think they're in the mood for a AJ Green one-year rental. They're in this, I would think, to get someone who can help them this year or next.
Right. We had a question from Louis 95,000. If you were a GM, would you trade for a receiver that was on their rookie deal? Ideally, but those guys would cost a lot more. Chase Claypool, yep. Jerry Jeudy. If you're going to get a receiver still on his rookie deal, that's going to be a difference maker. He's going to be a guy that's going to cost a lot because he still is on his rookie deal.
Yep.
So if you can get a guy like Cooks who has some year left, because like you said, you're not looking for a one-year rental because you want a guy that can help, you know, try and make that push this year. But then also, if it doesn't work this year, be around for years to come. So you're not just throwing away draft picks for, you know, half a season and you get some more return out of it.
Yeah, I wrote a trade deadline story on Saturday saying that I had heard that they're legitimately looking to get a receiver. And people are like, but Rodgers isn't on the same page as these rookies. You're going to have to break in this guy. I don't think it is that way, though, Matt. I think a veteran receiver sees defenses through veteran receiver's eyes and sees things that Romeo Doubs, who might be a great player in time, just doesn't see right now. I don't think it would take a whole lot of time to get that veteran guy up to speed with what Rodgers is seeing, and he can be an immediate impact player. So I do think there's a different learning curve there than Joe Rookie.
No, absolutely, because especially coming off the heels of what Rodgers said about all the mental mistakes, yes, it would obviously take time for a new guy to learn this offense, but you'd think with certain things, a veteran would know them more than a young guy, maybe a Romeo Doubs, a Christian Watson, even Amari Rodgers, Samori Toure would know it because they've been in the offense, played with Rodgers, as opposed to a Brandon Cooks. But there's definitely some comfort level with a veteran. And Brandon Cooks can play outside. He can play in the slot. He's kind of got that frame. Randall Cobb's injury, Amari Rodgers, maybe not being in the quarterback's best, highest of graces. He could certainly come in and make some big plays. And listen, if the offense can turn it around, that would solve a lot of things. And I'm going to use that to transition into the big concern, for me at least, on this team, is not really the offense, Bill. It's the defense. I wrote last night, you know, it's not, you know, this groundbreaking surprise that the offense and special teams are struggling. I mean, for crying out loud, the special teams was number 32 in Rick Goslin's rankings last year. We knew the offense was going to hit some bumps without Devontae Adams and moving pieces on the offensive line. The defense was supposed to be their strength. They have 6 first-round picks, and that's not counting an All-Pro in Devondre Campbell, Pro Bowl alternate in Rasul Douglas, a guy they've given 2 big money contracts to in Preston Smith, a solid underrated safety in Adrian Amos, and a couple other D-linemen who can hold their own in Dean Lowry and Jaron Reed and TJ Slayton. They haven't been good. You know, they don't rank in the depths of the league in some categories except for takeaways, but my point is they're vastly underachieving. Joe Barry should have a top 5 unit. This is just one complaint I have. They are paying a cornerback more money per year than any cornerback in the history of the game of football to cover number 2 wide receivers while number 1 wide receivers go off. It happened against Justin Jefferson. It happened against Stephon Diggs last night when Jair was on Gabe Davis for 14 of the 23 routes he ran and shut him down, while Stephon Diggs made Rasul Douglas and Darnell Savage look silly. I'm not calling for Joe Barry's job quite yet, but those are the kind of repeated mistakes that get you fired.
Yeah, I remember one of the training camp episodes, I said that if Joe Barry doesn't have a top 5 scoring defense, he should be fired. Now, that was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I kind of mean it.
They're number 16 right now.
They're number 16. They don't do anything well. It's unbelievable.
They pressure the passer well.
Yeah, they pressure. Fine. So they do that.
Here's something. So they're 2nd in the NFL behind the Cowboys in pressure percentage. I believe they pressure the opposing quarterback on just under 41% of dropbacks. But they're tied for 17th in the league in sacks. So they're getting there. But on guys like Josh Allen and these mobile quarterbacks, Taylor Heineke, Justin Fields, Daniel Jones, Zach Wilson, these quarterbacks are still making plays even though they're getting pressured. Packers aren't finishing the play. They can't contain an edge to save their life.
Yeah, and it bites. The run defense is just so bad most of the time that you sure like to be pressuring a quarterback on 3rd and 8 rather than 3rd and 3, right?
For sure.
You get your odds are a lot better. They bet that Devondre Campbell was not a 1-year wonder when they re-signed him, and they bet that Rasul Douglas is not a 1-year wonder when they re-signed him. Maybe they were just 1-year wonders. I don't know.
I wrote that exact thing last night. It's certainly looking like it through 8 games.
And Quay Walker, you know, the ejection last night notwithstanding, he's been slow to the acclimate. Would that be fair to say that he's had his moments, but not nearly enough? That's probably
he's had his moments. I am inclined to give him the rookie pass, but he's shown enough where there's something there. He's so versatile. They just have to figure out how to use him right.
Yeah, and then you got Darnell Savage, Matt.
Oh my God.
My God. I mean, you've been on this for most of the season, but golly. So here comes Josh Allen running down the sideline. And look, Allen's getting the first down anyway, right? If Savage sticks him, he's still getting the first down on that 3rd down. Not even if it was a scramble, like just a bootleg. But he just goes running past him and throws out an elbow. And then there was the one running play to Singletary where he whiffed. He stinks. And they're on the hook for how many millions of dollars for him next year? That was
7.9.
Yeah, so I guess they're lucky that's only 7.9. That safety's not an expensive position, but I have no idea what Goody was thinking on that one. Because I thought Savage had a good rookie year, and he'd kind of plateaued, or maybe trending slightly downward, and then they give him all that money. He can't tackle. That's like job number 1 for a safety. You better tackle somebody. Because if you don't tackle somebody, you get Devin Singletary turning a gain of 8 into a gain of 32 or whatever it was. He is terrible.
There was one, you know, it was a tough angle where I was sitting in the press box, but I think Cook had one where he turned like a gain of 2 into a gain of 17. And there was the one on Allen where Savage thought, you know, sticking out his forearm would knock down a 6'5" quarterback who's twice his size. Listen, you can't have a last name Savage and be that afraid to tackle someone. It just can't work. You're supposed to be a thumper, a playmaker. You're a first-round draft pick. He showed flashes before, certainly not this season. But, man, that he has not lived up to, I don't even want to say the hype, but the what the Packers need from him. He hasn't met it, come anywhere close. He struggles in coverage. Him and Eric Stokes look lost out there. Neither of them want to tackle anybody. It's ridiculous. How can this Packers defense strike fear in anyone when their supposed hard-hitting safety just whiffs on tackles week after week after week? It happens every week.
Yeah. It's happened every week of his career. I mean, you'll go back and look at his missed tackle data. He is always right at the bottom or the top, depending on your vantage point of the missed tackle percentage. He's always right in that bad spot.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Matt, I kind of hit quickly on Quay Walker a minute ago. You were there for Quay. This is like the big secondary story from last night was Quay Walker's ejection. To me, it looked like he just lost his temper for no good reason. It looked like he was tumbling out of bounds. According to the NBC broadcast, he kind of tumbled in toward a practice squad tight end.
Yeah,
it looked like he was simply trying to keep him from rolling into him. And then he got up and freaked out about it. But you were there in the locker room for the exchange. Take us through that.
Yeah, so he was like very regretful about it. Just like you said, he said basically he lost his cool. And, you know, he spoke for about 2.5 minutes. And at the end, Stacey Dales from NFL Network asked him, you know, you seem very emotional. What are you thinking about? What's going through your head right now? And he said, I don't know, through very visible tears, and just walked out, abruptly ended the interview. That kind of spoke to the emotion about how he felt about it. And here's what he said. He said, I was making a tackle on the sideline. My former teammate, James Cook, rookie running back from Georgia, Dalvin Cook's younger brother. And I just felt as I was getting up. I wasn't on him or anything like that. I just felt as I was getting up, I felt somebody push me from behind. And I probably misinterpreted what it was. And I just felt the push, and I'm on their sideline. Feelings just flowing. I'm very hyped and everything like that. And I just let it out of emotion. Right away, as soon as I did that, I regretted that I did that. But it's something I'm going to have to live with and I'm going to have to face. I'm willing to do so. And someone asked it if he's kind of a emotional reactor to things. And he said, yeah, sometimes my emotions can lead me to do things that after when I do them, I kind of regret that I did. It's a rookie mistake. A moment of rookie ignorance gave the Bills an extra 15 yards. They were on the Packers 43, I believe. Cook ran for 7 yards on 2nd and 6. They scored 4 plays after the penalty to go up 20-7. Bonehead mistake. Can't happen. But it's a learning experience. Matt LaFleur said to him, oh, maybe you can hear this gate boarding right next to me. Matt LaFleur said to him right when he got off the field, and you can tell by the broadcast, anyone who can lip read, LaFleur said they always get the second guy. So even if someone did push Quay Walker, he was the second guy, they're always going to get him.
Yeah, he was the first guy, Matt. But I thought, yep, this is the really good line. You guys are going to have to send the Quay Walker quotes yesterday. I thought this is a really mature line from him. It's something I can't do, and that's something I already know. I kind of hate that I did it because people that don't really know me are going to really assume that I'm this bad guy just because of that one play. I think that's a really, really good line by Walker. That's a guy I think
he gets it.
He gets it. I'm not going to say it's never going to happen again, but he understands. And I know there's a lot of people out here who think these guys don't care. This guy cares about it. So certainly hurt him. I mean, you couple that with Devondre Campbell walking up with a ice pack around his right knee. You end up with Isaiah McDuffie, who's a pretty good player, along with Eric Wilson, who's been here for, 4 weeks playing linebacker for the second half of a game. So not ideal. I'll just say LaFleur will give us some information later on Campbell, but maybe he won't. But man, oh man. Just when Campbell has a really big game against Washington, to see him limping off, not a good sign.
Yeah, not a good sign. We'll see what Matt LaFleur has to offer about the various injuries moving forward. I will say, you know, it was good to see Christian Watson walk off under his own power. The backboard came out for a second, and it looked nasty. I've never seen Flea, Brian Engel, the head trainer who goes by the nickname Flea, sprint out to a player as fast as he did to Christian Watson yesterday. And then they brought the backboard out, but Watson got up and walked off under his own power, quickly ruled out with a concussion. So that's always something to monitor. And then, of course, the foot injury to Elgin Jenkins that kept him out. So a couple things to note when Matt LaFleur talks later today. You might already be listening to this after LaFleur talks at 3 p.m. Central Time. Let's get to some questions.
You know, speaking real quick of Watson, too, you know, Rodgers said they had, a half dozen plays in just for him that they really liked. That really shows the talent of him. I mean, he missed the previous two games and three of the last five. For him to come off of a pretty lengthy absence because he played parts of those other games to be a featured part of the game plan really shows what they think of him.
Right.
All right, go ahead, Matt. What do you got?
From Scott Neelitz, what's more important, trade for a receiver to salvage the season or trade assets to mortgage present for the future? You know, we kind of touched on this. They're kind of in a tricky spot because the sensible answer would be trade assets to mortgage for the future. But what kind of message would that send to all your owners, to the fan base, to the league when you're, like we said, for as dire as this season seems and as dire as we're making it seem because they are playing terribly, they're one game out of a playoff spot. So, yes, the likelihood is they're not going to win anything of substance this year. Not the division, not the NFC title, not the Super Bowl. But you had the line to Rodgers a couple weeks ago. All that matters is you have a chance. You get in and have a chance to make a run. Listen, it's unlikely, but until that chance is zero, you have to go for it. Given all the resources you've put into this team, you have to go for it. So what's more important is trading for a receiver to salvage the season. What's more sensible? Trading for the future. But the Packers have put themselves in a position where they can't afford to do what's most sensible, if that makes sense.
It does. They're not going to do it. I wonder what you'd get for Aaron Jones, though.
I think you would get a McCaffrey-esque package.
Probably, because he's healthier than McCaffrey.
You could get probably, I would think, first and a third or four mid-round picks. And by mid, I mean starting in second. So what'd they get for McCaffrey? They got four picks?
Yeah, was it two, three, four, five?
Something like that.
I'm saying
if a team calls, they're not going to do it.
No, they're not. But
let's just say all things neutral. If a team called and offered a first and a second, not a first and a third. The Packers should not be allowed to pick in the third.
No, that's a good point.
If they offered a first and a second for Aaron Jones, a team really desperate, the Eagles, the Bills, you do it in a heartbeat. No one would offer that, I don't think. But it would certainly be enticing. Next question. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's because his base salary or it's his cap number goes up to this astronomical level next year. Where it's like when he signed that contract, all of us kind of assumed that this would be his last year in Green Bay. And so, I mean, if you feel like you're going to get rid of him, It is an interesting conversation, though. They're not going to get rid of him because they need to go win, but it is interesting. All right, here's one here from, here's one, I can't read his name. It's AN5FER. How many signs should a petition get so that Gutekunst is fired? I know it's not realistic, but what's your guess? And the only reason why I asked that, Matt, is he's under a new contract. He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
But I know there's a few Goody questions in here. I figured I would just throw that out there as a way to say that he and LaFleur are under contract extensions. That's guaranteed money. He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not. But that doesn't mean we can't question the job he's done.
That's straight.
Listen, he's put together the past couple of years one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. But there are some flaws in it. His last four first-round picks, four of his last five first-round picks, Darnell Savage, bad. Jordan Love, we don't know, hasn't played. 2021, Eric Stokes, bad this year. 2022, Quay Walker gets ejected last night. Hasn't really done much of substance this year. His third-round picks are absolutely dreadful. Sean Ryan, too early to tell. He hasn't played. 2021, Amari Rodgers. You all know the story there. 2020, Josiah DeGuara, non-factor. 2019, Jay Sternberger. He's making jokes on Twitter about Terry McLaurin getting drafted behind him. That's how bad that situation was. 2018, Oren Burks. I mean, just he should be banned from picking in the third round. And yes, he's put together a good team. So some of it's on coaching and some of it's on the players. But like we said, it's too early to tell right now. Those contracts that he gave to Devondre Campbell and Rasul Douglas are looking a little iffy. And Russ Ball should be grouped in with that as well. But listen, there are things out of their control. You give a contract that you probably should have given to the back-to-back MVP. You give a contract that you probably should have given to the best left tackle in football. Things happen after that that are out of your control, and I don't think that should reflect poorly on a general manager's job. I think he's still a good general manager, but there are some cracks in the woodwork that are starting to get exposed. I still think it's more on coaching and players, but Goody is far from blame.
Yeah, you know, on the one-year wonders of Campbell and Douglas, but they had to make those moves, though, right?
I mean, they had to, yeah.
You just won 13-4. You moved on from Devontae, which is a whole other conversation. But if you're trying to win games, you got to bet on Devondre Campbell. Are you going to let him walk and need to go draft another linebacker? You need to draft two linebackers then? Are you going to let Rasul Douglas go and then try to go draft another rookie to play right away? I mean, they had to do it. I'm not questioning that they did it. And I bet even in his heart of hearts, he probably even knew the risk of those guys being one-year wonders. But they were so darn good. The team was really good. What are you going to do?
You had to. I mean, I agree. I was thinking about that this morning. That's one of those things where you trust the process. Obviously, the process is good. The results might not be. And you look back on it, hindsight's 20/20, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, you had to make those moves. It just might be one of those where it just doesn't turn out as well as you thought. There's still time to turn it around, though. All right, I have to board my flight soon. Let's get to two more questions. is a Nagberry flashing to the point where the Packers can feel confident counting on him as edge three in 2023? Yes, is my answer. There was one play that told me that yesterday where Josh Allen, who's faster than every Packers defender on the field in the front seven, a Nagberry pursued him scrambling from the opposite of the line of scrimmage and actually kept up with him pretty well. I said this to Rob in the press box. I haven't seen a Packers edge, aside from a couple times Rashawn Gary, who still doesn't set a great edge. I haven't seen an edge rusher for the Packers pursue the run like that in God knows how long. He's got some motor to him. He can be a guy.
Yep, absolutely right. He had sacks in back-to-back games heading into this one. Speaking of Rashawn Gary, there was one time where Allen beat him around the corner and he just flat out quit on the play. It's like, bang, that was unexpected from Rashawn Gary to just to not pursue. From T-A-D-H-G, a whole bunch of other letters after that. Here's a positive one. I feel like we genuinely are a good team that is not far away, especially in a lackluster NFC this year. Do you agree with that, Matt?
Do I think they're a good team? No.
that is not far away.
Well, they're not far away, literally, because they're a game out of the playoff race, but good teams don't disappear for halves at a time. Good teams don't have coaches who have mind-boggling game plans. Good teams have a balanced offensive attack and seem to know their identity, not after their best running game of the season, their most impressive one, the quarterback says, to be successful, we need to throw the ball downfield. I just don't think they're a good team. But guess what? There are a lot of teams that are not good teams that are going to be competing with them for the playoffs, so they might catch a break this year. Listen, the Rams have a losing record. The Buccaneers have a losing record. The 49ers are 500. The Packers have a losing record. There's a lot of trash football. The Eagles, the Cowboys, the Giants came back down to earth yesterday. I mean, the Seahawks are good. But the Eagles and Cowboys are really the cream of the crop in the NFC. Besides, after that, it's all up for grabs. And the Vikings. I should include the Vikings. 6-1. But even then, you know, I was watching SportsCenter on the plane this morning, and they had a note that the only team with a winning record that the Vikings have beaten this year is the Dolphins. And in that game, the Dolphins started their number three quarterback, Skylar Thompson. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know if the Vikings are good. Wide open. If the Aaron Rodgers said it yesterday, all they need is one win to shift the tenor of the season. If they can beat Detroit convincingly, get some confidence back, you know, we've been talking about it around the building. There's no way Mike McCarthy comes into Green Bay and beats his old team, right? Or, I mean, if they win that, they get back to 5-5. Tennessee, Philly, it's going to be tough. This next stretch is going to be tough, but it's got to start with the win against Detroit. If they lose against Detroit, season's over. If they win Detroit, they keep it on the tracks for a little while longer.
Yeah, that's why I asked that question, because that Rodgers line just needs one win to get the momentum going. Maybe just grasping at straws, Matt. Maybe that's all it is. It's funny, you look going through the questions today, there's so much positivity on this Twitter thread, Matt. And to me, that's where these Packers are. You come off a game where you know they're going to lose, and they didn't get embarrassed, and people are kind of, it's okay. There's a lot more positivity today than there has been.
Well, maybe that's because all these Packer fans bet Packers plus 10.5, and they only lost by 10, so maybe they made some money.
There you go.
They did a great job covering the spread. Good teams win, great teams cover. I don't gamble on the NFL anymore because I am not allowed to per my company rules as of this season, but man, that was an exhilarating cover for anyone who had Packers plus 10.5. And listen, nobody expected the Packers to win that game. They could have cut it to a possession if Mason Crosby made that field goal. It looked like Jack Coco had a low snap.
Oh, it's awful. Terrible snap.
Yeah.
Not even close.
He's kind of regressed. That's the story for, we can discuss that later because I need to go catch my flight, but they were an onside kick away from making things real interesting against arguably the best team in the NFL last night. So if Packers fans want to take solace in that, that's fine. It's the games before that that'll bite you. The Jets and Giants both lost yesterday. They might come back down to earth. The Commanders won again, but they're still the Commanders. I mean, those are the games that are going to bite you down the road. So we'll see if they can turn it around. They've got games against the Bears, two against the Lions, the Dolphins. You know, can they upset the Rams? They're not having a good year. Pull one off against the Titans at Lambeau. Time's running out. But a 9-8 record might get you in the playoffs this year. And that's still alive. As bleak as it seems, and rightfully so for any fans who want to view it like that, it's still alive.
All right, Matt, hop on an airplane.
All right. Talk to you later. I'll see you at LaFleur later, and maybe by that point they will have traded for a wide receiver. Maybe we'll have an emergency podcast to talk about the wide receiver they traded for.
Sounds good. We need good things to write about. All right.
Yeah,
thanks, everybody.
Hey! Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.